Today we're going to see Jesus' encounter with his parents when he was 12 years old. So the series is called When Jesus Meets Someone Like You. Let me invite you to stand for the reading of Scripture. Some of the encounters we will study together here on Sunday mornings, and the rest you will study in your growth groups. Luke chapter 2 gives us the account, verse 41. Now, Jesus' parents went to Jerusalem every year at the feast of the Passover, and when he was 12 years old, they went up according to custom. And when the feast was ended, as they were returning, the boy Jesus stayed behind in Jerusalem. His parents did not know it. But supposing him to be in the group, they went a day's journey. But then they began to search for him among their relatives and acquaintances. And when they did not find him, they returned to Jerusalem searching for him. After 3 days, they found him in the temple, sitting among the teachers, listening to them and asking them questions. And all who heard him were amazed at his understanding and his answers. And when his parents saw him, they were astonished. And his mother said to him, "Son, why have you treated us like this? Look, your father and I have been searching for you in great distress." And he said to them, "Why were you looking for me? Did you not know that I must be in my father's house?" And they did not understand the saying that he spoke to them. And he went down with them and came to Nazareth and was submissive to them. And his mother treasured up all these things in her heart. And Jesus increased in wisdom and in stature and in favor with God and with man. This is God's word. You may be seated. It can't be a good day in any parent's lives to lose your children. But believe it or not, parents lose children all the time. Some of them for 5 minutes, some of them for 5 hours, some of them for 5 days. Children get lost. They go missing. You're walking around with them in a shop and you think they're right there, and you turn around, you're like, "Oh my goodness, where is she?" And then you find that you left her in some other aisle next to the yogurt. And so there is some guilt that comes with missing your own child. And especially if they even go missing in your house. And you're like, "She was right there." And you look in every room and you can't find her. And you feel some guilt as a parent that you are you don't have it together. But can you imagine the level of Joseph and Mary's guilt? You haven't just lost a child. You've lost Jesus. And you haven't just lost Jesus for a few hours. You have gone on for a whole day and not checked in on your boy. They were going a day's journey. Without note, it says they didn't even know he was missing. I mean, how terrible is that? That's a bad day. That is a bad day. Jesus goes missing, and Mary describes her emotions in the midst of this. She describes her emotions as great distress. Now, it may not be a child in our lives that goes missing, or that we feel or realize is missing. But when something is missing in our lives, that's important. We know what Mary is talking about. The great distress it causes when something that matters to you goes missing, either because you had it and lost it, or when something that matters to you is missing because you've never had it. Causes great distress. So important things that are missing in our lives cause anxiety and distress, and in turn The distress raises questions for us. Jesus goes missing. He's their son. He's important to them. It causes great distress. And in their distress, they come to Jesus and they have questions. Why have you treated us like this? That is Mary's question to Jesus. Why are you doing this to us? She asks, she says, your father and I have been searching for you in great distress. Yeah, I received news last night that one of my first cousins, I have a group of first cousins who are American citizens and born and raised, never been to Malawi. My uncle, my mom's older brother, moved to the United States the year I was born, and so he started a family there, raised his children there, and so I have first cousins that are on that side. And my brother sent me a text last night to tell me that one of them was found dead yesterday in the morning or afternoon. They're not sure what happened, and so they're still waiting for a report. It was 29 years old, young guy. Paso, we call him, short for his name, Watipaso. But they found his body by some railway track, and they're trying to investigate how he may have died. So when I heard the news, I was thinking about memories of time that I spent with him in my life. And and I sat down at the dinner table for a few minutes as the news sank in that wherever it is I have been before to visit with him, he's not going to be there anymore. So that made me quite sad. And I experienced what Mary was talking about, this distress of something that is important to you, that you've had in your life, being lost. And at the same time, I experienced this phenomena of distress and the sadness raising questions for me. I was thinking in my head, having a chat with the Lord inwardly, why would God allow him to die so young? What happened? Why didn't God protect him? So, this happens to all of us. It can be a person. It can be a job. It can be a relationship. It can be an asset, something you own, a car, a house, or a watch, something important to you. You had it, you've lost it, and now you feel the distress of missing it. And the distress raises questions about God's care and God's concern for you. And something that Jesus reveals in this encounter that we are not aware of when we bring our anxieties and our questions to Jesus in times of distress. Jesus indicates to his parents that the questions and anxieties we bring to God in times of distress are revealing questions. Our concern is often to get answers and solutions, But Jesus is not just listening to our questions. He is listening to what our questions reveal when we bring them to him. And I'd like to point out three things Jesus indicates. Our questions to God in times of distress, our cry to God in times of distress, reveals three things that Jesus listens to when we cry out to him and when we have questions out of our distress. First, our questions and anxieties, or our cry to God, reveals what we assume is true. What we assume is true. Mary, in her time of distress, asks Jesus, "Why have you treated us this way?" That question reveals that she assumes that the distress she's experiencing is Jesus' doing. That question reveals that she assumes that that is true. She assumes that Jesus is uncaring. She assumes that Jesus has neglected them. She assumes that Jesus is treating them unjustly, or unfairly, or wrongly. And that's something we need to remember, because we can go through life in times of distress, bringing our cry to God, bringing our questions to God, our anxiety to God, and then wondering why he does not immediately alleviate the distress. God does not just care about the distress we go through. He cares about the assumptions about what is true that our distress reveals. And if our assumptions of what is true are wrong, then Jesus' concern is to change that assumption. Not just to change the distress by removing it, but to change what we assume is true. Because in times of distress, our cry to God, our question to God, our anxieties before God reveal what we assume is true. What we assume is true about us. Why have you treated us like this? Shows that maybe she thinks this experience would be okay for others, but why would you treat us? We special ones. Why would you allow us to go through this? What we assume is true about us, what we assume is true about him, why would you, of all people, why would you treat me like this? When you're going through an unpleasant experience, Jesus does not deny the unpleasantness of it. But he is under no obligation to agree with what you assume is true about it. Because your distress may be real, what you assume about it may be false. And often when we cry out to Jesus, bring our questions to him, our anxieties to him, we must remember that our anxieties and questions and distress are not the only things Jesus is listening for. He's listening for what you assume is true. And he might, in his response, respond in a way that challenges what you assume is true. The second thing our questions and anxieties in times of distress reveal, what we assume is important. What we assume is important. Mary's question and cry and distress reveals, she believes, priority number one is how she is treated. Now, how you are treated is an important thing. But where you place it on your list of priorities might be something Jesus wants to challenge. She, in her cry, in her question, in her distress, she reveals what she thinks is most important. Her first question isn't, "Son, are you okay?" The first thing out of your mouth, the first thing you cry for in distress, reveals what you consider most important. And just because what you are distressed about is important doesn't mean Jesus will agree that it is the most important thing. And Jesus is listening for that. When you're crying out to him in distress, when you bring questions to him, he's listening for what you consider most important. Because if what you consider most important is not what is most important, his response may include challenging that. Challenging that. Yeah, there's been a lot of distress over the last few days among young people on social media here on the continent because of a derogatory term that the US president used to describe African countries. And you can tell from the distress that how our countries are treated is important to us. But in times of such distress, Jesus is listening for what you consider most important. And if the first thing out of your mouth is, "How dare you treat me like this?" it reveals what you consider most important. And Jesus might challenge that. Even though he might agree that, yeah, that's important. How you are treated is important. But by treating it like it's the most important thing, he might challenge that. Why have you treated us like this? Not, "Are you okay? Hey, what have you been up to for 3 days? Have you had anything to eat?" I mean, 3 days. 3 days. Your son is 12. Did he have something to eat? Who has he been with? Who were you with yesterday? What about the day before that? Has anything good happened? No. Priority number one is how I am treated. The millennial priority. How I am perceived. How many likes I get. How many people agree with me. How many friends I got. And what I am passionate about. How dare you. And justice. Justice for these ones and for those ones. Jesus might agree it's important, but if you treat it as most important, he might challenge that because he's listening for it. Jesus says, "My priority is God's house. My priority is what God is building." What God is building. What God is building. Which brings me to the third thing. Your cry to Jesus and your questions to Jesus and anxieties before Jesus in times of distress reveal what you assume is his purpose. What is Jesus' purpose in your life? In Mary's case, her distress and her question reveals one of Jesus' purpose that she believes is for him to alleviate her distress. Any distress she's in, Jesus to jump through hoops and remove it. To treat her nicely. And Jesus says, "My agenda is to build God's house. We were looking for you for 3 days. Why? Why were you looking for me?" Now, when Jesus says, "Why were you looking for me?" I don't believe he's challenging her decision to look. I believe what he is challenging is where she was looking. Because it took her 3 days to get to the temple. Who do you think I am that you would look for me anywhere else except where I will be doing God's business? It's not so much that she looked for 3 days that I think Jesus takes issue with, but it's like, you were looking for 3 days? Where? Where were you looking? Why didn't it dawn on you that I would be right here? If there is any place I would be, if there is anything I would care about, the moment you noticed I was missing, why did you not ask, what is Jesus' number one passion? What is Jesus' number one priority? And if his number one priority is this, where is he likely to be right now? And you just take the kabaza and come straight to the temple. But no, you were looking for 3 days, God knows where. Why were you looking for me? When if you understand my priorities, you would not have looked at all. You would have known I would be right here. I've been camped right here for 3 days. Because Jesus' priority is building God's house, a home for God. One way of thinking about Jesus' ministry is that Jesus is present here on earth, building a home for God, as he is in heaven, building a home for us. Now, often, we get it twisted. We think Jesus is here, and his number one job is to build something for us. And when we cry out to him, and our cry and question and distress reveals that we think his number one job and purpose is to build something for me. He might agree that it would be nice to build something for you, but he might challenge your assumption that that's why he is here. Because Jesus is primarily here to build something for God, to build lives that are homes for God, to build our lives as a place God lives in, delights to live in, to build our lives as homes that the world can look at and say, that woman over there, God lives there. That dude over there, God lives there. Jesus is here to build a home for God. He went to God to build something for us. So he says, why would you look for me anywhere else except where I would be engaged in the building of my Father's house? Why would you look for me? So when distress comes because something is missing, or you have questions because something is missing, either missing because you've never had it and you wish you would, or missing because you had it and it's lost, remember that whatever your cry to God is, whatever your question to God is, Jesus is not just listening to your question, he's listening to what you assume is true, what you assume is most important, and what you assume his purpose in your life is. And if there is something amiss in those three things, then he will use your moment and season of distress to challenge that. To challenge that. As he continues in his quest to build your life into a house for God. When things fall apart, Jesus seizes the opportunity to build a house for God in your life.